Hello, and welcome to another episode of Muse on Minis, episode 322.
Musing and amusing.
I am your host, Nigel Brooks. I play Kador.
I am also your host, Keith Christensen, and I play Signar, Canadian standoff.
Yes, so.
I am.
Sorry. So, where am I? I'm some random guy. I'm Seabass, and I play Kador and Trolls.
And I'm a very, very special guest, Aaron Displaced Creeks, also known as Wiley.
All right. Do we have any news or announcements?
Gen Con this week. Nova Open's happening soon, right?
Nova's in 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I was just talking to one of the guys there. Apparently they're having like huge turnout, so that's really promising.
Nice. Recruits is in a couple weeks.
Yep.
WITC is in a couple weeks, but that's all like locked up at this point. The new mercenary. I guess we can, we'll switch into, I guess that's news. The new mercenary theme force was spoiled, sort of.
It's got Josh back in.
Does he think it's good?
Yeah, he's like completely through the moon over it.
Because I'm looking it up right now. I don't remember it very specifically.
The big thing is that it gives you points, bonus points for jacks or troops. You just basically literally can take anything.
You also get the benefit of, I think the Jack Marshall jacks get flank with warrior models.
Yeah, yep. So it allows everything in mercenaries, basically. Not all the minion selections, but all the mercenary selections, as well as like the Tinker, Wrong Eye, Rorsch. So basically, you just can't take the bear and the snake. And that's pretty much it. Cephalix is not included, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Correct. No Cephalix.
But then the benefits are for that points that you take in units and marshaled jacks, something like that, converts to free solos. And mercenaries are going to go apeshit for free solos, right? Because they can get like, I don't know if it specifies small base or not, but you can potentially get, for sure you can get Iris.
It does. I just brought it up. For every 25 points of units and warjacks, you net one free command attachment or small or medium base solo without the lesser warlock rule for free.
Okay, so no Alexia team and no Stannis.
Correct.
Which is fine. Oh, it's out in War Room already?
No. I just brought up the Insider and the basically just read quickly through the text, and that's what Will stated.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I'm reading too, but I hadn't gotten it as specifically. So then, but they have expensive and very high quality mercenary cells available to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like Aaron said, all the marshaled warjacks get flank with friendly faction warrior models, which is possibly a compelling reason to consider a Jack Marshall.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, because Jack Marshalls are very vulnerable, I would say, in Mark III. And we haven't really seen too many of them thrive yet. There's been some experimentation with Vlad and the Behemoth in that theme force. But nothing like, we haven't seen Jack Marshall the Warjack's tearing it up anywhere yet.
No, and I think from my experience, probably one of the things which really probably tips that over is the ability to power up or empower, I think the new term is in Mark III. So I think a heavier or light warjack with flank is good, but as you pointed out, Keith, the ability to keep the Jack Marshall alive, if that Jack Marshall dies, then obviously one is going to lose that ability, but even so, it's just going to have a limited amount of attacks as opposed to someone in a battle group, which is going to regularly get a power-up focus and obviously be able to get allocated. Yes, it can obviously use the Jack Marshall abilities, but I think you'll find, to me, it's still just, I'm not 100% sure. I think it might read well, but it might just be a little underwhelming when you actually get it on the table.
Particularly because unlike now Kador, Signar, or definitely Retribution, they don't have Empower from a solo, so they can't gain any additional benefit from that Jack Marshall rule. They don't have the ability to take that +2 melee damage rule and compound it by getting more attacks. They don't have the ability to get all the boosts they might need for a gunshot, so it's tough.
Yeah, that's right.
It is kind of interesting, though, when I think about it, because I'm like, well, so how good is a Buccaneer with flank is the question I ask myself, right? So, like, because a Buccaneer is a 6-point light, right? It has assault on a knockdown gun, which you can't boost, but you can get it +2 to hit. It has set defense, so it might actually, and it's def 13, so it might actually be able to save its Jack Marshall a charge with good positioning. And then it's a power strength 12, just spear pointy thingy, right, with a hook on it. And that's my technical term. So I like the thing I was thinking about is, like, if these jacks gain flank, how good is it if you can get him another attack, or if you can increase his mat, or you can increase his rat? Like, and I kind of like what I was looking at is I was kind of going down, like the Buccaneer kind of jumped out at me. The freebooter might actually be interesting on a Jack Marshall, mainly just because it's so cheap and carries with it a fair number of boxes. I don't know, because the thing about it is even if they kill, like, even a Nomad might be really interesting, that because even if they kill the Jack Marshall, like, it's marshaled, it's not attached to a junior warcaster, so it doesn't become inert, it becomes autonomous. So it doesn't actually give up a combat action. So the question is how hard is it for, like, your warcaster to walk by and spend a focus to bring it in? Because you're not actually losing that activation. It's just not as efficacious as it was. So there might actually, like, I was thinking there might be something to that, but I don't know for certain. I'd love to see someone try it. I'd like to see what it looks like on the table, because it might be really cool.
Well, I suppose it comes down to when you can categorize these, and I'm just using the example that they used in the Insider, with they've got obviously Ruckershaw and Colby Sterling. I'm not sure what defensive tech, or obviously the key is their command of those two models are.
Ruker has drive shield guard, so that Nomad has a shield guard.
Okay, Nomad shield guard. Because I suppose the thing is that yes, the benefit. Sorry, if that Jack Marshall dies, you are correct, Scott. You can obviously just use your Warcaster to scoop him up and put him in the battle group. But I mean, from that point of view, just particularly being specific on this tier list, you get the bonus points from having units and Warjack. So I mean, if you're having a Jack Marshall that doesn't do a great deal or is likely to die, maybe you might be better off just having that Jack part of the theme list as a part of the Warcaster's battle group to potentially maximize free points on other solos like an Iris or an Orin Midwinter. I suppose that's going to be the trade-off in terms of, you know, getting the Jack Marshall in a relevant position to do work and survive. So obviously things like the shield guards are great bit of defensive tech, but from what I've seen, the more successful Jack Marshals are those that either come with some pretty good tech or are pretty resilient themselves.
The freebooter is somewhat interesting because that will go to, with Crush, it goes to power 16 with 4 dice damage against knockdown targets.
Mm-hmm.
That'll mess you up.
And Crush does give you an additional attack on top of your normal, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And its distance is 1-inch melee range. Does it walk 5, like 7 or 8 with? Can it take damage to move faster?
It can walk 7. So it can have an 8-inch threat on the walk.
Mm-hmm.
Also of note, the thing I like about the freebooter is that it's immune to knockdown, which is one of the biggest weaknesses of a Jack Marshall Warjack, especially one that you're trying to get into melee, which the flank rule incentivizes you to attempt. Because without focus and access to focus and the shaking rules, it's like playing Mark I Warjacks. If they become stationary, they lose their activation. If they get knocked down, they have to forfeit movement direction. So you have to be prepared to deal with that.
And sorry, just one other thing I noticed about that tier list. For every unit in the army, one heavy Warjack gains advanced move. That's their other benefit.
Which is nice. I mean, it's very similar to like the Kador Warjacks getting advanced move. Mercenary Warjacks are pretty slow.
Definitely from the Jack Marshall point of view, could help getting those guys in more relevant positions in terms of scenario placement.
Yeah, it seems like it would help you to be able to get a Jack up there to be able to benefit from flank. I just don't, like, I don't know how quickly, like, the rest of the infantry is going to move behind it to be able to do that. But at least it opens up some options. It might be kind of cool. If nothing else, it'd be a really funny game to play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just nice because, this theme force is going to be a great boon to mercenaries because in any list they play, they're probably getting 2 free solos.
Yes.
Like Shay is over the moon happy because he can build any list he wants, and he gets two or maybe three free solos, right? Because it's for every 20 points?
25.
25. Oh, okay. So as long as you... So if you pay for a single solo, you don't get three. No, that's not true. Because
no. You can get four easily.
You got your spillover. Yeah. See, yeah, it's three. It's basically always three.
Yep.
Unless you spend more than 20, like more than your Warjack points worth of solos, which is unlikely.
But in saying that, if you want more solos, you could, depending on what your better group points are, if your better group points are 25 points or more, you could qualify for four free solos if you maxed out a combination of Warjacks and units.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, it's I'm also kind of curious when we're talking about the solos, I'm kind of curious, like, does this mean, like, Eris shows up in almost every list? Because Eris is kind of hard to swallow at 7 points, but at free, she seems really good.
Yeah, Pistol Kane is in every Ghostly list. It's like, what's the best thing to take for free? This guy.
Yeah.
Well, and I was also thinking, too, like, from a Trollblood player's perspective, because Doomshaper 3 absolutely never, ever, ever, under any circumstance, ever wants to see Alt Nashley. I'm curious how much Alt Nashley we're going to see come back. But he's a minion, though, right? Alton's a minion.
So yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works, because they all have... Let me look him up. Because they all have that mercenary rule on them?
Yeah, I think so, because he's a... Yeah, I don't know how that's going to qualify.
He's a mercenary minion solo, so I don't know why he wouldn't be eligible for this list. I guess we'll have to see the specific rules for it when it comes out. Because let's see what they say here. Blah, 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 blah. The Irregulars allows you to take any mercenary warcaster and non-character warjacks, as well as all mercenary units and mercenary character solos. All units and all character solos. So why isn't... Yeah, I guess I don't understand. Because from my reading of that, Dahlia would be allowed. Because she has the mercenary rule. She is a mercenary solo.
Mm.
But they specifically call out Wrongeye and Snapjaw and Roshan Brian from the minions department. So I don't know. There's something missing there, or an infernal ruling that I don't understand, that minions are not mercenaries, even though they say they are. Or, I don't know. Maybe they mean mercenary rule is not the same as the mercenary faction. I don't know. So Alt Nashley is a big question mark. Probably not, I would say.
My feelings will forever be hurt over that, if that's the case.
But it's certainly, I think, as one benefit from my point of view is the openness of the Themis. Obviously, a lot of the Themis have been quite set in particular flavors and particular restrictions, mainly obviously in the unit / solo department. But this is obviously very open ended, which I think is going to be a great benefit for the mercenary faction.
Yeah, like in the early drafts of Shay lists that I was looking at, I already wanted to put in like Acosta, and he's a big old free bastard now. So it's like, you probably see a lot of him, probably see a lot of Iris One. But mercenaries have all those utility solos that they're always wanting, so maybe not. Maybe some lists will just be using it on 4-point stuff.
Yeah, Joshua's list had 15 free points, but he might not have min-maxed the getting four dudes.
I don't think Shay can afford four dudes, because he wants more solos than that.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, 15 free points is quite significant.
Yep.
So, you know, particularly if Iris is, as you said, Iris and Acosta, or Midwinter, Ragman, those kind of solos. Getting them for free is definitely a big benefit.
Did we ever talk about that Kador theme force that was announced?
The Greylord Turnian one? We have not.
It's Greylords and Doomreavers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nigel, take it away. Are you totally excited?
Nope, not anymore. I was. I was like, yeah, sweet. And then that's the Merc one. I was like, oh, dumb.
Why are you such a crumb bum?
The Merc one allows you to take Jax, and it basically lets you take everything for free points. And I was like, now that I've seen it, I was basically like, everybody should get this. And then the Greylord theme does not do that.
So you're just mad that their toy is a little shinier than yours?
It's like a lot shinier. I've like cubic zirconium versus a diamond, kind of. But the I don't know. I mean, it's cool. It's like a cool theme, but like the way they built the current. The mercenary theme allows you. So here's my problem is that when I saw the mercenary theme force, there's been a nagging sort of with SR 2017. So there was like a window where the Vlad tier list, the Winter Guard tier with all the rockets was extremely powerful. I mean, I just like destroyed it. Just scenario didn't matter. I just like, but in 2017, it's actually not as relevant because it's hard to, you have to have more of a combined arms. You need more of a presence in some way. And so, like, my Jaws of the Wolf list, all my tier lists essentially only get, like, two free things because I'm kind of mixing and matching what I have to take about. So my Jaws of the Wolf is, like, 50 points of jacks, and I still take my units. And then the same thing with Winter Guard theme, I'm still taking enough jacks to sort of have a table presence. So that cuts into my free dude points. So it makes the tier list bonus, like, a little less attractive when you're only getting, like, 8 free points versus 15 or 16. But yeah, the Mercenary one is super exciting in that regard. Other than that, so let's go back to the Kador tier list, I guess. Doom Reavers and Grey Lords give you free points. God, I can't even remember what the bonuses were. I'm actually so...
Yeah, well, I've just pulled it up here. So it just says that for every... You get a free command attachment or small or medium-based solo for every 20 points of Grey Lord and a Doom Reaver model slash units in the army.
Yeah. And this one's a really mopey, a mopey bonus to begin with. So you have to work really hard to get your bonus. And then when you do get your bonus, the most you're going to get is like a 4-point guy or a 3-point guy. Like his demo, Will Schick's demo tier list got 3 3-point dudes. Like, you butthole. Like, is this a crappy tier list?
The other benefit, though, you don't think, so the
apparition move is spectacular. Yeah.
That you can choose one. One yeah. non-character Doom Reaver or Grey Lord unit to gain apparition. And the third benefit is that the army can begin the game affected by their Warcaster's upkeep spells.
Actually, those are both super good bonuses.
I have a question on that. So Doom Reavers have Spell Ward, but you're not actually casting it on them. They're just beginning the game affected by it. So is it possible to give, say, Iron Flesh to Doom Reavers? Is that a thing? Because I think the answer is no.
Yeah, the answer, well, from previous experience, the answer was no. From this may have changed, so I apologize if it has, but definitely from a Mark II body and soul point of view, when the ruling was for De Negra II, the exact same wording that you used about, you know, and it was ruled that you cannot target a model that has spell ward or such rule that doesn't allow it to be a legal target. So if following the same principle, I would suggest it's probably no.
Yeah, I kind of had that feeling that that's probably the way it is, but I was like the kid who's like opening up the last present at Christmas. Like, I was hoping amongst hope that it was like what I really hoped for. So,
Whaley, are you reading? Do you have the text of it currently? Insider up.
I do.
How is it worded? So, if you've got offensive upkeeps, can you start with opponents with your crap on opponents?
Don't think so. Additionally, friendly model slash units in the army can begin the game affected by their Warcaster's upkeep spells. And the text goes on, not exactly a major boon for someone like Butcher 2, but a significant boon for Warcasters like Butcher 1, Iris 2, and Malakoff 2, just to name a few, which does obviously potentially suggest otherwise. But as I said, I was just based off the ruling from I appreciate a different edition ago and the actual clarification. So it's definitely got to be friendly, so you can't put your offensive stuff out there. but in terms of obviously this list that they've just because you can take Grey Lord units, I'm assuming things like the Grey Lord Cav and the other Grey Lord guys are all eligible. It's not just Doom Reavers.
Yep.
I don't know. I think
there might be some more. I mean, obviously, we're never going to be able to recreate what they had, Mad Dogs of War and Mark II, but I don't know. I think there could be some more. I mean, particularly with Apparition on those Grey Lord Cav, I think it would be extremely, extremely effective.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, so using someone like a Vlad 2, potentially, or someone like that, getting that upkeep spell on them early, the signs of importance. I can't remember what the upkeep spell's called. Hand of Fate. Yeah, getting Hand of Fate on them and getting them out there doing a lot of work. I'd say that there's probably a bit more in there than you're not going to potentially maximize your free solos like what those other lists are, but I would still be pretty interested to see. I reckon there's more in there that about this list that could be quite powerful.
Just because of the way it's built, I just like the restriction of small, medium-based, because the only big solo is Fenris. They should have just probably thrown him in there, because then everybody gets Fenris and 2 4-point guys or 2 3-point guys, and it gets them to their 15 points.
Yeah, fair.
But, you know, just me.
But it's in saying that, though, because, I mean, obviously, because of the unit restriction, the maximum you're only going to have is 60. Like, if you wanted to max out, you're going to have 60 points. I don't know. I just feel maybe you still might be able to do that. I suppose it comes kind of when you push that far and then get into the 69 points. If you take finish on top of that, you're probably chewing into what kind of battle group you're going to have. That's probably the trade off there.
Hmm.
But are those Grey Lord solos still worth taking, Nigel?
Colden Lords are pretty good. Just the little guys, the not power up guys. Yeah, they're pretty fantastic. Magic Attack 8 is not to be slept on. And they still have Ice Cage. And they have a really interesting board control. Like, you can't use ranged weapons within 10 inches of them if they use that spell. Mm-hmm. So if you can tuck them away.
Wind Ravager?
Yeah.
They have Wind Ravager, yeah.
That's the Bad Santas?
Yeah.
No. This is the Grey Lord Turnian. This isn't the Grey Lord Forge Seeker.
Okay. The old guy.
I'm sorry. I said Turnian. Turnian's not the right word. It's the Grey Lord.
Colden Lord.
Thank you. Yeah. That dude has Wind Ravager. And then the Turnians still have like Ice Cage and their spray and their cloud effect. And then, And then Bad Santa does Bad Santa things.
I was playing a weird Vlad 2 list for a while where I had two Colden Lords in it. And they were literally, like, if I had dudes to spare my feet turn, I would literally feed on them and have them walk up somewhere in Wind Ravager. And it would, like, tilt people so hard. It's an interesting, there's a lot of interesting tech in the list has a ton of interesting tech. And there's actually a lot of casters who have, it's a weird tier list because you don't get to have, like, the full meal deal. You get to have, like, a cool idea. And you can run with it. Like, for example, Strakhov 1 in this tier list, giving Doom Reaver's Apparition and then Strakhov's feet is an incredible alpha threat. And then when you combine that with the fact that he's resourceful and then he starts with his upkeeps in play, there's some interesting things that can happen because you can take a Grolar, run it, a Grolar with an advance move. It gets a 6-inch advance move. The other one gets a 4-inch advance move if he takes two Grolars, for example. And then the one runs and then he rotates superiority over. And he doesn't have to even pay for the upkeep. So then you have two Grolars. One is 6 plus 12, 18 inches up the board, plus your deployment. And then you've got the other one basically 2 inches behind that.
So can I just ask a question? You said the Grolar are getting advanced move. Is that a rule on the Grolar?
What?
Advanced move? Is that a rule?
Oh, sorry. God, I'm getting the Mercenary. We just talked about the Mercenary. I'm getting that mixed up. Boo!
Yeah.
Boo!
So there's no advanced move.
Dude, sure. Bad tier list.
There's no advanced move.
God, just apparition.
Just apparition. But apparition on a unit. You think? I mean, I still think, as I said, people might just be tempted this about that Doom River spam. But I think the real power of this list was more into the Grey Lords than having obviously some Doom Rivers, but more into the Grey Lords.
Yeah, I think.
In my opinion,
you
because Doom Reavers got nerfed, right?
Well,
yeah, they're down to 1-inch reach.
Oh my God, are you serious? Yes. Jesus.
No. 2-inch melee range.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me pull up Doom Reavers real quick.
Something important changed about them from Mark 1 to Mark, or from Mark 2 to Mark 3. I don't remember what it is.
They gained tough. I thought they got buffed, but they're really expensive now. That's their big stupid thing.
They went down from Power Strength 13 to Power Strength 12.
Yeah, that's also terrible.
Yeah. Because 12's kind of a tough place to be for a Weapon Master unit right now, because Arm 20 is your benchmark. They still have Berserk, they still have Spell Ward, they still have Advanced Deploy. They inherently have Tough now, which kind of eliminates the whole point as to why you would take the Grey Lord Escort.
The Escort gives them Rise, so it's actually, he's super good.
Yeah, and he does give them Silence. Like, he still gives them Silence, because that's what he gave them Mark II. But they are 13 points a unit, so their costs went up to, like, 6.5 points versus their, 5 points or 4 points?
Six.
In Mark
sorry.
Yeah, so and then under Mad Dogs of War, they went down to 5, right? Did you get like a -1 or something?
Oh. Yeah, for every point of Doom, for every unit of Doom Reavers. Okay, so it's, never mind. I was off base. But so they've effectively gained tough. They cost, like...
Lost a power and are half a point more expensive.
A point and a half more, if we're talking about the theme
force.
Oh, yeah,
point and a half more, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the lost a power, so...
But, yeah,
I don't know.
Comparing them to Knights Exemplar, who are, I think, 9 points, it's like, God damn it.
See, when I look at this tier list, it doesn't immediately jump out at me as something that's just going to shake up the meta. But the more I think about it, like, with all the themes coming out, and then with SR-17 changing so much as to what we play, like, there might actually be, like, there may be something to just having Apparition on Grey Lord Escorts or Grey Lord Outriders, or Apparition on a unit of Doom Reaver Swordsmen so they can unjam themselves to get past something or whatever. Like, there may actually be something to it, because if people want to play, like, the infantry skew game, like, there's not a whole lot more in the game that will eat units faster than a unit of Doom Reaver. Like, it takes something really special to do it.
Yeah, Knights Exemplar are only 9. I'm not sure how I feel about the comparison of the two.
The reason why I compare them is that Knights Exemplar, like, I just, for the, my Knights Exemplar is just huge value. Like, they kind of get delivered a little better because they just are inherently not as crappy at staying alive, right?
And they are harder to remove, which is probably the biggest factor.
Yeah. They're a little slower.
2 inches less threat range.
Mm-hmm.
So that potentially could be 4 if you want to factor in the apparition.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are not spell warded. I don't know.
It's just, you just pay less points to have, like, I mean, it doesn't take much. You get 3 units of Exemplar for every 2 units of Doom Reavers. At that rate, they start becoming a lot better. Like, they sort of, you're like, ugh. You get overwhelmed pretty quick.
I wouldn't expect them to be 4 points different. They're almost 50% more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And again,
they're a whole solo more expensive.
Yeah, and they do different things. Like, you know, one really clears infantry hard, but the Exemplars are good against infantry. They're fantastic against Jacks. They just blow up Jacks like it's nobody's business. So, I don't know. It just, like,
I imagine that what they wanted was a comparison between the fully kitted out unit, because their solo costs 5, or their attachment costs 5, and yours is only 3. So at that point, they become closer to parity.
Yeah, but that's the poison pill.
Exemplar get decent against infantry.
That's the poison pill, though, is they get theirs for free. I get my 3-point guy for free. Like, they get you coming and going.
Yeah, I suppose having cheap attachments and solos isn't necessarily a good thing. You're like, pack more rules in there. Make it cost more.
Yeah, exactly. Make that a 7-point attachment, and then I'll be excited.
Give me that 7-8-point solo. Give me that 10-point attachment.
Well, the thing to point out, which might make you sad even more, Nigel, is that Grey Lord Escort's abilities are only granted, so if you kill him, they lose all those abilities.
Boo.
So I don't know how, you know, he's not that survivable.
Nope.
Yeah, I wouldn't be that enthused about paying for the UA.
The thing about the UA on that particular unit is he's a 3-point attachment. He's like total garbage. So there's yes, you can remove him, but he's giving them rise in silence. So it's like, who cares? You know, he's not contributing. So if you're wasting your time taking away those granted abilities, unless you're Krios, there's not a huge value. You know, some guy who, like, can mass knock down everybody, but that Doom Reaver represents a much greater threat than a guy attached to them. And you almost always just kill more Doom Reavers over that stupid guy, I would think.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, most of the time I would rather just shoot at the knocked down Doom Reavers that will automatically die than try to kill the guy who gives them rise.
Yeah, because every Doom Reaver is like a baby Bile Thrall. He just represents so much carnage.
Do we have any other news?
Nope.
We don't want to talk about Battle Engine Racing?
Wait, what?
It's the newest, in the newest No Quarter, it's Hungerford, the newest variant game that Hungerford has put in there. Like, the previous one was Colossal Wrestling, which I never played.
Hmm.
So now there's Battle Engine Racing, which I'll probably also never play.
Yeah, I probably won't play.
Yes, I have. I've never played either myself.
It was just a throwaway.
I would make a track with a bunch of walls, like, interspersed about 5 inches apart from each other, and then that way, like, the dwarf player just auto loses, and the Menoth player, like, ah.
That's terrible.
Shall we move on to a bit of a discussion about Steamroller 2017?
Let's do it. Now, we talked about Steamroller a little bit, at least on the last episode, if not the last two, but it's sort of still new, so we're still... If we retread anything, we apologize, but it'll probably be more, like, more crunchy.
Well, yeah, basically where I wanted to take this topic was just a little bit from my personal experience, and maybe just to help out for probably some of the newer people getting into the head around Steamroller 2017, and just some of the, I don't know, just some experiences, and maybe just a little advice for things to look out for and to avoid kind of trivial defeats, because not being cognizant of the way that the game is kind of heading. So prime example on those scenarios with flags, and I don't know if this comes down to maybe a little deeper in terms of list building, but definitely to be thinking about their relevant abilities to score points. As I said before, I think when an initial came out, there's a lot of thought and probably just a lot of spitballing, about how relevant a scenario was. And I know that I fell into the same preconception about scenarios not being extremely relevant. At least that's what the initial thought was, jumping off the page. But I can honestly say after playing some games now that I would go back and disagree with my initial thought. So not even specifically talking about casters or lists, but just there's a lot of scenarios that have relevant scoring components to them. Prime example, obviously, is just having a flag and the ability to score a point on a flag, and protecting a flag, protecting the space around a flag so it's difficult for people to contest, and the importance of it. If people aren't cognizant of the way the game is panning out, and that obviously happens in the first couple of turns, from my experience, the game can very quickly slip out of your grasp by either being you just auto losing because they get the 5 points ahead of you, or they're just constantly scoring those points. So you're behind that you just really don't have a great opportunity to catch up. Of the scenario packet, there's four scenarios in particular where there's like easily four or more scoring options in a single turn. So obviously I'm referring to the first one, which is the pit, referring to standoff, which is the second one, spread the net, the third, and then the last scenario in the packet, which is recon two. There's a lot going on in those scenarios in terms of zones, flags, and objectives. I've had a couple of recent games where, ironically, choosing to go second has been quite beneficial when I identify that my opponent's list is not particularly fast, and I have elements of my list that is fast, and you can set up a significant bunker in the zone, so it's very hard for them to score because you're going second. They're not able to attack your objective until turn three. You can bottom of two, if you're able to just run a scenario, run a solo up on a flag, that's a pretty easy point you can get. And if they're not in a position to contest that in their turn, you can very easily just get to three control points. By running a solo to a flag at the bottom of two and then creating a barrier around it, which they can't contest. So by the time you get to turn three, you're already three control points up. So, I think from my advice to people would be in terms of just, in terms of list building, but also thinking about the game and identifying those key opponents, the key opponents of your opponent's list, which you need to try to nullify to prevent a fairly trivial kind of scenario. I don't know what your guys' experiences are, but definitely that's what's becoming apparent to me, really playing. Getting stuck into this new steamroller packet.
Yeah, I totally agree. The flags are definitely something to watch out for against a fast army. The other one against fast armies, that's a really big problem. The non-flag ones where you have a friendly zone that you score 1 point and they have a friendly zone. If they're fast and they're like towing in your zone with like an incorporeal battle engine and you can't get it out, or Blackbane's Ghost Raiders or Gremlin Swarms or something stupid, and then they start getting that 1 point per turn, the game is immediately like in danger. The pressure's on you to like not lose a zone the rest of the game so fast that the game can be kind of like difficult to play at that point. But flags are, of the apocalypse. So there's so many good casters that have spot control that can just kind of get rid of that little area because the zone of control of it is so much smaller. So it can be,
Yeah, definitely. Like my initial impression was thinking about a path to victory, looking at attrition. But what's become relevant now is that you've got these strong brick type lists which can obviously attrition hard, and your idea is that you're going to be grinding your way through your opponent and then through just sheer will being able to come over the top of them. But now it appears that even though in principle, that theory is all right. If they get that jump on you so quickly, you might be in a situation where you can lose the game in turn, at the top or bottom of turn three. 3, or almost in turn 4, where you don't really have an opportunity where you can start grinding away. And looking at those kind of traditional list of value, if I had to stay on my side, and as you said, there's so many little niche pieces now where not just talking about scenarios for holding your own flags, but looking at other elements of contesting. And obviously you mentioned a couple about incorporeal models or battle engines and whatnot, but definitely I think in a way too it kind of helps promote a more balanced kind of list build. I honestly don't think too many lists that just purely rely on, you know, like a massive amount of troops and minimal battle groups or vice versa. There are definitely some scenarios where you could potentially struggle because if your opponent gets the jump on you in terms of points, you just don't have the ability to score and kind of keep in pace with them. If they're able to set up a situation where they've removed your objective, sitting on their flag and got a majority of their army protecting that area, and they don't have to necessarily contest too hard on the other side, because if you don't have a scoring piece that can potentially put pressure back on them, I think that's definitely something that I think that might be the objective of why these scenarios have been developed like this, to try to encourage some kind of different list composition. But yeah, I think it's a bit of a double-edged sword in terms of some of those lists where you're just trying to maximize free points for argument's sake by putting in, battle group models, or you're just trying to put in infantry models, and you're finding yourself that you just don't have those scoring elements that you require on a particular scenario.
Yeah, I know for me in SR17, like a lot of my lists, I talked about this last week, but a lot of my lists have changed. Nigel sent me a really cool list with like Hayase Eliminators and Assassins and in a Jaws of the Wolf theme that I'm testing and will continue to test for a while, because I really kind of like how that list is shaking out. I think it's pretty cool. But you're right, though. It almost feels like it's like a soft comp, like Keith mentioned. Because like you are, like if you walk into a game of SR 2017 and it's spread the net and they have any kind of control function against you, if you're playing 10 Marauders, I think you're probably just toast. Like, I don't think you can meaningfully contest enough quickly enough without dying. And I think that's really interesting, because like as a Kador player, like that for like, I'm looking at like different Warjack options. Like, I'm going back and revisiting the Clamjacks, because it might just be good enough to just trample him into a zone and just say, all right, can you kill my arm 23 dude while he contests? And then hope they can't, or position it to where like maybe they can't get enough on it to do it. So that one 14 point model is buying you like 2 turns, but more importantly, it's denying them 2 points. And if you're scoring your own flag or something, then you might be able to achieve parity, especially if you went first. Like, you may be able to actually achieve parity in scoring. And if that happens and you're the first player, like, I feel like your odds of success in that game just went up considerably, because going second is definitely, I'm completely convinced, is where you want to be in Steamroller 2017. Brent, one of our locals, he's a really close friend of mine named Richie. Brent Richie and I played in a team tournament on Saturday, and all day they were going second for that intended purpose. Just, I think, mainly just to test it and just to make sure. And everything they thought was absolutely true. So if you can achieve parity in scoring and you're going first, it feels like it puts you in a really good position.
Yeah, I suppose the only exception I would say from my experience about choosing to go second would be if you were playing against an extremely fast army. If you choose to go second and they pretty much aggressively chew up a majority of the board, you might find that either you have to move into their threat ranges and cop an alpha, depending on how fast they are, that might be, you can't avoid that. And then the flip side of that is, obviously, because I've chewed up all that board space, is that then not only are you going to have to wear the alpha, they might be then just taking free points in terms of being able to put their caster and solos if there's flags and taking up zones, so on and so forth. But, yeah, I think basically just purely from a scenario point of view, I think that's right. It's either, from my advice or approach, would be either to – you need to think about how you can minimize or shut down their ability to score. That could be one solid path to victory, or, which I'm not in favor of, but it is an option, about just effectively trying to create if you cut the board in half, so to speak, or you, in terms of the scoring options, you're like saying, okay, if you've got free rent on this side, for every point you're scoring, I'm scoring just as many, worst case scenario. So you effectively go for a bit of a scoring race. I think people coming into it need to be aware of this and have a plan and a thought about actually how they're going to achieve it. Because without, like, going in unprepared, and that's not even, you know, really drilling down next level on these particular control casters or people with TK or ability to just move your contesting pieces out of the zones, the game can very quickly just, get into a stage where you're three or four control points down, and it's very hard for you to stop them from just trivially scoring the last remaining points. And in some cases, if you don't commit hard enough in that contesting, you might not have lost many models at all, but the game's gone beyond reach because I've just scored too many points.
Yeah, and then just to counter a slight point with counter that Scott made was, or he was talking about the Marauders. I actually think the Marauder list holds up okay. It's fast. It's all in your Kool-Aid. It can test everything handily. You have a feat turn, so you have a turn where you're very hard to deal with, and you can only control the Jag zones, but you do get four free solos, one of which is a sniper and the other one's a manhunter, who are both very good flag getters. And then you still have the one unit of mechanics, typically, which is not super reliable, but it's definitely usable. And then it becomes down to protecting that unit of mechanics, which happens to be a little easier than it looks when you've got 10 heavies, patrolling the board and slamming everybody all over the place.
And also, it's like the best thing ever for Marauders if your opponent is spending their whole turn like desperately trying to kill your mechanics.
Yeah, digging out mechanics, and then, yeah. I think the Marauder list holds up in 2017, which is kind of what attracted me to it, because it was also the list I played the most when practicing 2017, and it was very, very good. But like the Vlad list, all rockets, is relatively bad. And the big problem with that one is actually the opposite. So I only have two destroyers. The two destroyers are easy to remove. And then I've got nothing to try to compete with those rectangular zones. And that is really tough. Like, that's a really tough problem when you've got heavies that you usually have to kind of, you don't have the luxury a lot of times, especially in 2017 now, to hang them back and just shoot with the bombards. They have to be in that, they have to at least be in your rectangular zone if your caster can't be in it, and they'll get killed, and then you're sort of done. You're having a hard time the rest of the game. Like, I just think that list was just not very spectacular. It's not, 2017 gives it a lot of problems. The battle engine, I play the battle engine. That's been the revelation for me, is like, it's, battle engines give me a little bit of a 2017 boner, but
yeah, because it's like there's, I would say, it's a third to maybe even half the scenario packet where there are flags that are pretty deep in friendly territory. And if you can put the line of engagement far enough past those flags that they are not being, that it is not trivial for your opponent to contest them, then it becomes your game to lose, because you just like sit a solo on it with stealth or something that's not going to get killed very likely. And then all of a sudden your opponent has to make some poor decisions to stop the scoring from getting out of control in your favor.
Yep.
It's definitely an aggressor's packet. And I was talking to somebody about the efficacy of gun lines in this, and because he was talking about like, well, there's still like half the scenarios I get the extra turn of shooting that I'm used to with gun lines. And I'm like, but that's not enough, because you can't put yourself in a tournament scenario where your matchups is forcing you to play one list, but the scenario precludes it. So even if there's only two scenarios, or even if there's only one scenario where you just lose because you're playing a gun line, and there is, it's called Spread the Net, you sit down against Spread the Net into a matchup where you need to play your gun line, and all of a sudden you lose. I personally, when I'm going into the list building phase, will not do that to myself. Mm-hmm. If there's a scenario that leaves one of my lists dead in the water, I'm not bringing that list.
Yeah, and that was my problem with Ghost Fleet when I went to that tournament, the homecoming. Was my first round, I played my Sorsha 2 into Ghost Fleet, got the matchup I wanted, and scenario didn't factor to me, and it was absolutely a problem. Like, I lost on scenario. Well, no, I got my caster killed, basically losing on scenario, having to, like, try to play poorly to stay in the game just on that, it was a miserable situation. I was like, Jesus. I had the right army in the matchup and the ability to take out, you know, the attrition. Like, I had a great matchup. It just did not work out with scenario at all. It was just a complete disaster.
Yeah, particularly when you make that point you're talking about with your Vladis with those two destroyers, is that not only you've got only a few pieces that can score points in those zones, they're obviously also the best pieces to try to contest zones. And from the point of view of that, you know, they're not an unlimited resource. So once someone commits to remove that destroyer, it's a double edged sword. Not only now you only got one other jack that can contest. Now, in order for you then to contest their zones, you've got to throw just waves of winter guard infantry, and obviously just being specific on that example, which it, you know, in some cases are considerably easier to remove. So even though you can potentially slow down their scoring, you know, it's only just really a small stopgap, because you're either faced with, you know, I'm only just really just do a token effort to contest, or I'm going to really overcommit to contest, but then you start struggling because they might start attritioning you out,
yep.
You know, putting more and more models in. And if they can get that jump on you, you're in a situation where you can't afford for them to just, you know, get to their fourth or their fifth control point. And they don't necessarily, just to clarify, they don't necessarily have to get to five control points or be five in front of you. But if you're in a situation where, as you pointed out before, Nigel, like if you're four control points to one or five control points to two, you know, you get that considerable lead, and you've got yourself where you've got that constant ed time running because they do have a silo, or the cast is sitting on a flag. You know, you just find yourself in, I believe you find yourself in a bit of quicksand where you can see the writing on the wall, and you're really not in a situation where you can really do much about it unless you can pull out an assassination or mm-hmm. or they really make a critical mistake.
So on that note then, because you guys are talking about like the value of contesting. So for someone like me who struggles in the list building phase, right? What kind of things do you look for in a jack, in a solo, in a character? And this may seem like a really elementary question, and forgive me if it is, but what kind of things do you look for that you're going to put in a zone to stop them from scoring? Like, what are the attributes you're hunting for? Why are they good? And like, you can get as in the weeds with that as you want. Like, you could call out specific models, or more importantly though, if you could just give guidelines as to like, well, you know, Keith looks for this and Nigel looks for this and Whaley looks for this. Like, I think that would be a really huge boon, because I think a lot of people, not just me, I think a lot of other people are kind of looking at Steamroller 2017 going, okay, so I know scenario is this massive, crazy thing that I have to deal with, but how do I deal with it? And I know I have to like achieve parity in scoring. I know I get in and score points, but what kind of things are you using to score these points? And what do we look for in factions that are going to help us do that?
So generally speaking, you want a model that is costed defensively instead of offensively. And what I mean by that is when you're looking at it and evaluating its rules, you're like, I think this is paying points more for its defensive abilities than its offensive ones. And that's going to be a model that's going to cost your opponent more to – they're going to have to invest in it, invest to remove it much, much more than it costs is the hope. So a great example would be in Protectorate, the old Kicky Monk that John is absolutely in love with, because its defense is like, it's immune to knockdown. It's like defense 18 or something absurd. When you miss it, it gets to make a full advance. It's just a total butthole.
Yeah, it can't be. It can't be CMA'd. It's immune to free strikes.
Yeah, CMA, CRA. It'll just contest for days. It's a complete and utter disaster. Very few factions get away with something that efficient, and that's sort of, this is going to be where some theme forces come to shine over others, is that which theme forces allow for these great defensive tools. Any light warjack with a shield is going to do really well in this, like a Talon. That thing takes so much work to remove, and it doesn't do anything. So you're like, you're spending like a heavy to kill this, you're like, this is terrible for me. But a Talon contesting a zone is a disaster. Like a Signarin Sentinel is a disaster. A Troll Bouncer is a disaster. Like any of these lights that get up to the armor 19 range, so that you have to spend a heavy's activation, especially if you're in a position to respond. Like if your bouncer is out contesting, and then behind it is a unit of champ, or like 5 inches behind it is in relative safety as a unit of champions, then it's like, so I have to put something heavy to kill this bouncer, and then in return, I'm going to lose it. This is a this is just everything about this is terrible. So those are the kind of situations you want to set up where you put something into contestion, which is very hard to remove. Or if you only need to contest for a turn, as cheap as possible, a Risen is great. But if you're looking to contest for the long haul, you want it to be something that's very difficult to remove and that you can counterattack if they do.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You want to, I suppose from that point of view, you want to also, you know, be asking that question of like, you know, you really want to remove this piece, but at the same time, what are you prepared to trade in order to do that? Because if you have then the next piece, which is not only going to remove their trade piece, but then become the next contesting piece. Because at the same time, you've got to think about, you know, we're talking about contesting. The same thing applies to them as well. They've got to look at if what they're going to be doing to contesting against you and how much work they want to do to removing your contesting pieces and so on and so forth. So if you can get to a situation where they're putting more work into, you know, they're putting more work into trying to contest, sorry, to remove your contesting pieces, which may or may not be successful, or in the long term, they're going to run out of legs, where you can then obviously, you know, start to use that attrition factor of, you know, trading favorably while maintaining the scenario pressure. They'll get to the critical mass where either you can then get something in their zone, which they've just run out of legs, which they can then not remove, or they run out of legs in for their contesting point of view. So you're scoring every single turn from your element because they have nothing to contest because they need to push things back into their zone or back into to remove your contesting pieces. And probably to answer yours, it's very easy as a Crix player to go on the shelf because we have a lot of very cheap incorporeal or stealth models. So from a Crix point of view, Scott, obviously my great contesting pieces would be obviously a Machine Wraith, potentially a War at Chiron. She can get quite good high defense and obviously has stealth, and just things like, I mean, even just Arc Nodes as well. You can basically have an Arc Node run into a nice position which it can contest, and you can arc a pretty decent spell as well. You know, obviously for 6 points, you can have that because that is in a situation of, particularly if you're able to utilize some terrain, a considerable amount of work needs to be done or considerable amount of activations need to be done in order to remove that piece. So to answer that, that would probably be from my experience.
Another one that was a really good value that was kind of driving me a little bit nuts was Scrap Thralls. I was like, are you serious? I have to kill these things. It was really annoying.
Yep.
Of what?
Scrap Thralls.
Oh, Scrap Thralls.
It's just tilting not how valuable they are.
Tricks too.
Yep. Part of me, Stalkers are great as well. Yeah. But anything free as well. Anything free.
So oh, yeah. Free Machine Wraith from your stupid battle engine.
Free Machine Wraith or a free Scrap Thrall or anything as well is always definitely good.
And one of the reasons why I think Grimkin is going to be a problem is they have the absolute best solo in the game for contesting.
Yep.
The goddamn Gremlin Swarms.
So that thing gets the home run because it's got stealth, it's incorporeal, and it can be free.
Yeah, it's free, incorporeal, stealth, has boxes. It's just
it also nightmare. Just literally does everything every turn. It's just like, come on. It's good. the Gremlin Swarm, the actual, like, the in-corp solo scenario douchebags is one of the biggest reasons why I think, like, the Kador, the Turnian theme, like, that's what excites me. It's like, okay, whew. Like, at least we have a theme that we can kind of, like, deal with some of that garbage. But, yeah, it's Scott, in our faction in Kador, I'm actually kind of like Jaws of the Wolf. I like because you get the four solos, two of which are support solos, two of which are the offensive douche, the go get them solos, and they're both stealth, and they both are kind of interesting contesting pieces. But yeah, beyond that, it's actually pretty tough. Like we have to think a little bit about our list strategy because, for example, in the Brent Simon game, I had to throw away my two destroyers on turn one to kill his early, like, his skirmishing stalkers. Well, I mean, I killed his stalkers, but then they both destroyers immediately got killed. And then I had no jacks, like, to do scenario with anymore. And you can't even make that type of play. Like, just knowing that is just like, geez, you actually, that it kind of takes that type of trade off the table because you still need those resources. And Kador has a tough... Kador does it with, like, our piece is the Devastator. Who wants to pay 14 points for, like, this idiot thing that, like, toes in, you know? It's the classic, like, we can get rid of stealth, but it's going to cost you 19 points. enjoy, and that's all it's doing that turn is lighting up things for the rest of your army. You know, you're going to basically pay 20 points to have a support function, and then that's sort of the equivalent. What you want to avoid is paying 20 points for something that just, I'm going to hold that scenario no matter what. But, I mean, I don't know, it is what it is. Maybe that's what we have to do is spend and 28 points
on. There are pieces that used to be great contesters, talking about the clam jacks, and they're back in 2-3 years ago, Steamroller. There were pieces that Nigel and I would use. You just tiptoe in a zone, and then you get to shoot forever, because they're never going to kill my Arcane Shielded Centurion. They're never going to kill the Crab Jack, or the Clam Jack. You just tow them in the zone, and you're good to go. But now there's too many scoring angles, and these flags that you have to contest are too deep.
And that only gets so far. There's too many, like, bulldoze, control, TK, like...
Yeah. Also, I think that not every faction is going to be able to build lists consistently that can go and contest those flags if their opponent pushes past too far. However, there's the nice thing about how Steamroller works is that when you score points, it's effectively taking them away from your opponent. So you can also just collapse hard to try to take your own ground to at least stem the bleeding. Like if they're sitting on a flag and you can't get to it, it's terrible, but you have a few turns as long as they're not scoring other elements and you are, even if it's only.
I'm sorry, Keith, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That was it.
Oh, I was going to say, so essentially, like, you know, going back to the Marauders thing, like, and maybe my comment about Marauders specifically was off key. Thinking more in terms of like the slow ponderous armor brick, and I was just using that as an example.
It's nothing slow and ponderous about it. It's in your business, dude. They're running 12 inches. They're reforming. They're everywhere.
They are with Harkovich and with Vlad, and even with Karchev. Like Road to War is surprisingly valuable.
Old Witch with the apparition for everybody. Like they're getting around.
But so essentially, like it's okay then. Because I found myself in this position against the Haley 2 player, and unfortunately the Haley 2 player on Saturday made a positioning mistake trying to TK Behemoth in the back, and he got just a hair too close and wasn't paying attention to battle charged. But, like, essentially, it's okay to kind of throw stuff, like, throw a little bit away and then just kind of, like, reposition yourself and just try to sweep the side of a board. Because essentially what it sounds like what you're saying, Keith, is and Whaley too, is that if you're going to play the attrition game plan, I feel like the attrition game plan is still a strong game plan. It's just you have to buy yourself time to actually get there. And I feel like if you're not cognitive, that's where you're going to lose a lot of your games, is actually trying to get to that point where you can let the attrition grinder start taking over. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, attrition is a scarier game plan than it used to be, though, because you have to be able to close out, right? Like you can't limp to an attrition victory anymore by sacrificing scenario, because if you get far enough behind on scenario, your opponent can just like all that. It's like, all I need to do is live for two more turns and then it's turn seven and I win. Right. You can't put yourself in that position. So your attrition I'm trading 6 points for five and I'm going to do that consistently and eventually I'll get there. And I might be a point or two behind on scenario. That used to work and now doesn't. So there's some versions of attrition that isn't viable anymore. It has to be a more aggressive attrition. It has to be an attrition that results in you taking over ground. This is why, in my opinion, the gun line is going to mostly go away, except for the absurdly dominant ones backed by control feats, like specifically Haley 2. And I guess if you count Ghost Fleet as a gun line, which it sort of is, Ghost Fleet will obviously endure.
I think Ghost Fleet's an interesting type of... I think Ghost Fleet's the blueprint of the new gun line, which is you want, like, the Kador replication of that will use Winter Guard Infantry over Rifle Corps, guys who are 8 inches away versus 14. And then you want to basically have, you know, dual action troops who are doing both things.
We were talking about pieces that contest like no other. The Wraith Engine contests like no other.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, Scott. And also from that point of view, too, there's one way you can look at it back to those Marauders. You can say to yourself, I mean, obviously it's going to be a case-by-case basis, but if you can like divide the board and kind of map out in your positioning and the way that you play, like, you know, these are the areas of the board which I'm going to take up an aggressive position and I'm going to stake these out to be mine near a flag obviously with your list in particular, you're looking for those rectangular zones. And then on the same side, so for argument's sake, just hypothetically, you start take out a flag in a rectangular zone and you stop your opponent from having to get there, you put some elements of your other army that say contest the circle in the other rectangular zone, and you might not be able to get to the flag, but think of it as in you're holding 2 points, they're only holding one. So at a scoring opportunity, you're going to be scoring more points than them. So you're not only are you from a point of view of you've got very nice contesting pieces because marauders aren't trivially removed from the game, you've also put like an egg timer on them. They need to do something. They need to kind of seize the initiative to stop you from just racking up these free points. And like that's another way where you can, particularly with such a list, that if you're able to get that speed element and kind of carve that section of the board up, you can force your board. You can effectively things that we're trying to point out, you can put that all on your opponent. If they're not cognizant or not thinking to themselves, oh, he's got 10 marauders, he's not going to be able to score this zone. But if you shore up the zone that you can score and the flag that you can score and keep them, and they've got no business trying to contest, particularly with such a large battle group, keeping people away from flags is going to be a lot easier. And potentially getting to their flag, there's got to be concerned effort that's got to be involved. It's not like a couple of support solos or a non-whippermaster unit is truthfully going to be able to go back there and remove your marauder. They're going to need some significant investment to be able to do that. And by the sounds of it, you've got quite enough guys over a series of turns to be able to contest. That's can be considered a successful path in order for you to win.
So I guess the other thought I have behind that, because we've talked a lot about like how to contest and things to look for. So I guess the other thought then is like, do you feel like in SR 2017, like it's almost, do you feel like there's value in building your list to scenario instead of your list to answer potential problem matchups? Or are you doing that at the same time you're building a list specifically to scenario? Cause it feels like there's obviously like, since scenario is so live, I know like back in the day, like Satixis Raider Super Jam was a thing, do we just build to do that again? Like, does Strakov play Legion of Steel and rocket a unit of Iron Fang Pikemen 28 inches up the board under mini feet and feet? Like, is that a thing?
Well, from my point of view, potentially, but it's more than, like, I suppose it's a multi-part puzzle. It's more than just that one element of, like, jamming out. You need to have your list in a situation where you can have the right pieces to be capitalizing on the scoring opportunities. So, I mean, if you're listening, I mean, from my point of view, obviously the way that the theme lists are working a lot these days is providing the free solos. They are providing you with those pieces to either use those solos to contest or use those solos to score. But it also comes down to thinking about the matchup as well. And in terms of when you're putting the models on the board and you're watching your opponent put the models on the board, kind of identifying, okay, which solo is going to go and stand on this flag and which solo of theirs is going to go and stand on that flag and what pieces do I have in my army that can kill that solo and what pieces in their army can kill my solo and obviously what things do I have to try to protect and prevent that, just honing in on that flag element. But obviously this can be applied on a much broader scale as well. And then in your mind, kind of thinking about, you know, how that game's going to play out. And if they only have one or two pieces that can take advantage of that scoring, if you're able to eliminate those pieces without obviously throwing away, more than required, then you, by removing that ability from the score, instantly puts us a lot of pressure on them. To the same token, if you're able to keep yours alive and keep him near the flag and keep racking up points, I think that's more of the initial kind of thought processes I think people need to identify to try to give themselves a bit of an edge. I think if you're playing against someone who hasn't thought about that, so for argument's sake, your deployment, they have one or two solos and they're both deployed on the left but their flag's on the right, you know, by the time they realize it, or they might be just completely out of position to take advantage of that. There's been a few games initially where probably less experienced players there's opportunities for them to get free points. Again, I know I'm really focused on the flag, but that's the easiest example where they're not cognizant of that and they're not taking that advantage. So, you know, whereas you do a lot of work to get to two control points, as the point Keith made before, that could be somewhat countered by them putting their silo on the flag and then they get 1 point. Because in some cases, you know, in terms of your plans, unless you have really exceptional pieces, you know, back to Gremlin Swarms and other bits and pieces, it's in order for you to cover everything, I just don't think that I've seen from my experiences, I don't really think you can cover everything, or potentially you can, but I think it's a matter of, like, you know, a lot of suboptimal kind of plays, whereas you might need to, you know, you might need to commit to, say, clear out a zone, kill an objective, or attrition to get to that point. It's making sure that you don't have a missed opportunity, you know, for, in terms of your positioning to score those, if I deem those 3 points, they're the things that I think is going to make a big difference. Because someone does a lot of work, and they're scoring two, but you're scoring one. Well, you know, in actual fact, they're not getting that far ahead. And depending on what they've sacrificed or what they've given up to do that may heavily influence the game.
So random CBAS question number 4,766. So I guess then the real thought process is obviously some lists are going to have to change dramatically. Like Nigel was talking about the list that he built to deal with Ghost Fleet. I played the exact or a similar list. And I agree, like that list probably has to change. But for lists that are probably like a little bit more centric or maybe a little bit more rounded and not designed to be such a specific counter, or maybe aren't as reliant on guns, do you think then, like, it kind of sounds to me like the real challenge in SR 2017 is not necessarily going to be, let me scrap my list, let me go back to the drawing board, I'm going to build something new. It's probably like make some minor changes to make yourself a little bit more available to scoring early, but really playing the game from the lens of, instead of playing like an attrition list from the lens of how do I get myself up on attrition with these plays, it's instead maybe played from the perspective of how do I initiate a piece trade in the zone so I let attrition take over, but I don't give up points at the same time. And so it sounds like we're kind of like, you're changing kind of the paradigm as to how you're looking at the game, because you're playing it a little bit more from the perspective of like almost like a strictly like scenario first and then let your list do what it naturally does later.
Yes, I would say so. Basically, yeah, you definitely build your list and you're like, all right, does it account for the matchups that I want it to? Yes, no. Does it like share? Does it fit alongside my other list? Yes, no. And then does it pass the spread the net test? It's like, can I not lose on this scenario in two turns? Because I'm pretty sure spread the net is the worst offender of 2017 as far as how quickly you can lose if you can't get across the board.
Yeah, I think you can actually score 5 points in a turn on spread the net.
Yep. And it's interesting because when I've seen Grimkin play this scenario, they can deploy in such a way that they're coming through their own flag. And then you'll naturally move to counter them, which sort of will naturally leave your flag exposed. And then all of a sudden it's like a Gorehound and a Gremlin Swarm appear over there and you're like, crap, and you start hemorrhaging points. So that's going to be like Haley too is probably going to do the same thing where she'll force you to come fight her on her side of the circle. And then like Lattermore will just run 16 inches and be on your flag when Haley feats. And it will be a complete and utter disaster. So the spread the net test is important. You have to have you have to know how to play that scenario, and you have to know how your list is going to play that scenario to not lose. And it's rare. I would say it's pretty rare in War Machine to have to not lose instead of looking for your victory. But spread the net somewhat it might even be worse than old Incursion. Not as bad as Incursion when you could dominate a flag, but it's like that level of attention that you have to be paying to the scenario.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say that, Keith, because like when you're a beginner at War Machine, one of the things that keeps kind of getting pounded into your head when you're new at the game is you have to look for opportunities to win. right? So, and that's where, like, a lot of times people get taught how to do a slam, how to do a throw, how to do all these other different power attacks. Because you're looking for an opportunity, or you're looking for an avenue to win by killing something, or whatever the case may be. So it's really kind of, it's really interesting that you say that, because it's almost a reverse of that. Not that you're not looking for advantageous play. Obviously not that, but the mindset, it feels like, has to change a little bit, because you are shifting the thought process from, how do I win this game this turn? Like, how do I throw this guy to get this guy here to do this, to make this slam, to blah, 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 blah. Like, how do I win this game this turn? And you're changing that to, how do I play to not lose? So in that way, next turn, because, like, every turn, especially as an attrition list or even an attrition faction, every turn I'm not losing is another turn I'm winning.
Ready. Yeah, right.
Correct. So it's really hard to kind of shift that paradigm as to, like, how you're approaching the game in terms of, like, well, I'm going to move here to not lose. I'm not moving here to win. I'm moving here to not lose.
I mean, it's like when you were playing against Epic Denegra in Mark II, you'd, like, I'm going to leave this solo, which can run 12 inches, 12 or 11.9 inches away from the edge of this zone, because Denny's going to feed it, or clear it and feed on the rest of my army. It's plays like that that you have to be making in some of these 2017 scenarios, where that was previously not the case. You could just play to gain advantage on every turn. You could just play for advantage. But now, with scenario being more volatile, you have to also play you have to have insurance policy. And normally when I'm teaching people to play War Machine, and it's been a while, but I would teach them initially to play not to lose. Like, finding angles to win, I actually think, is a more mid-level to advanced stuff. In the beginning, I just want you to not get your caster killed. I want you to not lose your heavy for nothing. I want you to not, like, get a shooting unit engaged before they get to shoot. Stuff like that. I want new players to play not to lose so that they can play longer games and learn more. I want more advanced players to start looking how to win. And so this is like, these scenarios kind of make you take a step back, because we're like, it's a slightly new game. Play not to lose again. Eventually, all the not lose stuff becomes muscle memory. Hopefully. Some of us need to relearn some of it, like the fact that stalkers can jump. and once not lose becomes like muscle memory, automatic processes, then it's easier to start thinking about, how do I win? And you can start being more aggressive with your caster, because you get a sense of when you are in a position that you're not in danger, and you can get a little bit more aggressive with heavies, and you can play those counterattack plays or piece trading, stuff like that is more advanced, I would say.
Okay. Well, that explains what happened to me then. No,
did you get taught the wrong way around?
I'm sorry, what was that, Whaley?
Aaron, you were saying? Oh, no.
Yeah, he was also chopping up when he was...
Whaley, no!
He might have just been saying, I gotta go to the bathroom, be right back.
Oh, that could be.
Something like that.
Yeah, when I learned the game, I went through a lot of the same lessons, but I learned it from some really, really close friends who, their motto was, if you don't know what to do, go forward. Because this game is about aggression, and it's about wrecking stuff and having a good time. So it doesn't really matter what happens. Go forward, wreck stuff. And then as I began to discover what this wonderful thing called Steamroller was, and that people actually played this game outside of my tiny little town, then I discovered very quickly that going forward, if you don't know what to do, is a bad plan. So then that's when I started to really learn. But it is interesting, though, because you also said, like, it's a new game, so we kind of have to relearn it. You're absolutely right there. Every time I sit down to play a game against a warcaster that I don't have that many reps in, or maybe it's a control caster, because I'm really struggling against control casters, it feels like it's a brand new game, and I'm right back to where I was 4 or 5 years ago, whatever. Excuse me, I'm right back to where I was then, and it's just, all right, line up. I'm going to let Brent slap me upside the head a couple times, and then maybe I'll learn something, and then let's do it again, and do it again, and do it again.
I was just thinking about our pieces. Keith, what? So, like, we were talking about how in the old days it'd be like the Centurion or the Devastator. What's your, like, Signar piece you're thinking now, kind of, is that role?
More along the lines of stuff like, Signar is actually weird in that we don't have as many good ones.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like Haley 3's army, obviously.
Strangely,
is pretty good.
Thorn is pretty annoying, but it's like such a huge point thing to do that.
Yeah, and if he gets taken out, oftentimes it's worth it for your opponent.
Yeah.
Lattermore is actually pretty good, because any Dragoon can usually be relied upon to hold an objective at least for a turn. Signar is still going to be reliant on the power of its guns. Like, it's going to... I think Signar is oftentimes going to... If it's not playing Haley 2, there's always that caveat. We're going to be playing Haley 2. There's also that caveat.
Yeah.
But if we're not playing Haley 2, we're probably falling behind on scenario and trying to just overwhelmingly destroy you. And then come back.
You want them using their defensive pieces to hang on while you... slap them about the head and face.
But if I was forced to be bringing some stuff in Signar for the purposes of contesting, I'd probably look to stuff like the Sentinel is a light with a shield. So 13-18 is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
We still have our Colossals, but then again, that's just that one zone. Sometimes two, I guess, but only in like the non-scenarios, kind of.
Yeah.
Oh, there might be some Outlast. A Colossal can contest a few things. Breakdown, that's the least scenario. They can contest multiples. I guess they could in Spread the Net, but then they could toe the square and be in the circle. But at that point, they're really locked into place, and that's never been a great thing for a Colossal to be totally stationary.
Yep.
Same goes for Standoff. It's a little tough.
Yeah.
It's a little tough.
That's one of the things I like about the new... The heavy metal. Is it heavy metal that they play with the 2 battle engine?
Could be.
Battle engines
give free points in both theme forces.
Oh, so. Jesus Christmas. All right. I believe it's heavy metal, the heavy metal one. It's got a Colossal, 2 battle engines, all the solos you could want. But the battle engines are just
heavy metal.
Yeah. Because they take up a lot of real estate. They can contest multiple things. They're just like so clutch.
But yeah, you run into the trap there of being unwilling to back up when they've successfully threatened you. And that's where you start losing huge bases for not very much gain.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think it's tricky. I haven't played enough Signar in 2017 to be sure.
Yeah.
I know Kane 3 is likely garbage without major reworks to his list. And I'm not sure he can survive major reworks to his list. Because if there was ever a one-trick pony, he's it. So if you take too many guns out of his list to try to contest stuff, I'm not sure what he does.
Yeah. Yeah, I sort of asked because it's goes to Scott's. I was just like kind of identifying because Menoth, it's like when you talk 2017, Menoth, Krix, Grimkin, maybe Trolls. There are some factions that kind of stick out as like they have so many great tools and answers and tier lists. They're like built right for it. Whereas, like, with Signar and Kador, it's a little trickier. It's like, we have awesome tier lists. We have, like, super raw power. And then how trying to make a list that, you know, Haley 2 is just great because she just sort of does, she's, like, perfect for, they can't make a game type that is out of her realm of control, essentially. But your other list, on the other hand.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I thought maybe you had something that jumped out at you, like a more obvious thing, because then I would basically try to export that tech or because Kador and Signar have a lot in common in that regard. So it's like, maybe if he's using like that little Trencher solo guy, Sly Marvo or whatever his name is.
My two lists that I'm taking to WITC, and this is without a lot of prep time for me, is it's a slightly converted Haley 2 Storm Division. I see you climbing on me. I basically took a Stormclad out of my Storm Division list and put a Battle Engine in, and then I took the min unit of Storm Lances and the min unit of Mechanics out for a unit of Storm Blades. So it's got it's light on solos. It's just Lattermore, Squire, and Junior. And there comes a point in the game when you're okay running the Squire to contest something, but it's not early. But the Squire does sit on friendly flags very nicely. Lattermore can go contest. She can go score a flag aggressively. But that list is basically reliant upon the power of Haley 2 to survive in scenario. It's fast by virtue of a unit of cavalry and telekinesis. And then it's got scenario pressure by virtue of Haley's feet. My other list is Haley 3. And I'm not 100% sure that her army moves upfield fast enough to work. But she does bring the two best scenario contestion pieces in Signar and possibly the game in the Echoes.
Hmm.
So that's what I'm doing. But that's not something that Kador can easily replicate?
Nope, because you're solving it with your casters in almost both cases, so...
Well, you can get down then.
Yeah, I guess me, I'm like... I noticed that Brendan Shirley was, or Brandon Shirley, I get, John's son, his name is Brendan, and I can only use one or the other. I cannot actually have both in my head at the same time. Brandon's been using Old Witch, and I'm guessing that's sort of his thought is, her feet maybe controls or slows down some of that. He can play aggressively, so say on Spread the Net, he can play aggressively to one flag and then just use Old Witch's feet to make sure that they don't maneuver something cheap and stupid at the other one, you know, like...
Yeah, I suppose her feet will stop almost anything from touching a flag if she's got it covered.
Yeah.
Most solos will
I suppose one thing you could look at there is in terms of maybe just what their approach is. I mean, obviously, one of the things that's so good about Hayley too, I mean, obviously, you know, it obviously speaks for itself, but if she can get to a stage where she can control the elements that she needs to control, feet, and can test your elements, that's probably one of the key things where the game just can slip out of control because, you know, you just don't have those, particularly under her feet, you know, your ability to do great activations is just heavily limited. And the thought process of trying to contest any element that she's got, you know, that she's really hunkered down. So from an Old Witch point of view or from some of those other control casters from Rupert and Chefsy, Dineka 1 and so forth is maybe that's obviously a potential path to victory as well, is looking at setting up a scenario where you've really controlled the scenario with the scoring elements and then feeding to limit your opponent. So you're trying to, you know, jump over a course of a couple of turns, maybe not get all the way to 5 points, but jump out to that lead where your opponent can just can't catch up.
What about the Dracoon? Is he in any themes right now?
Nope.
He's a great scenario piece.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I think with like Kador, I'm trying to solve it with my casters too right now. I mean, Old Witch is a consideration, just thinking about Hayley. And then Zirkova 1 is kind of, it's like super ghetto Hayley versions though. But the one that I've been trying to solve it with personally is just Strakoff 1, which is the, I have threat that ranges. I can actually avoid Denny 1, or even elements of my army can even come in from out of Hayley 2's feet. And then I can get a lot of work done that way. And then also I can alpha. It's just like I'm just trying to basically make a even larger baseball bat to hit them with. But yeah, I don't know.
Eliminators are great scenario pieces for Kador, I would think.
Yep.
The problem is that they can go like contest a flag, but then they can't score it if you manage to clear it, which is kind of annoying.
Mm-hmm.
They're a unit.
Yeah, they're being a unit though is really cute in like Jaws of the Wolf because it's not really a unit, but then you just run these like little 14 point, like, you know, these little speed 14 runners just go in and like control the zone entirely. Especially if they kill one, then you still control it. It's like fantastic. It's like super sweet. So yeah, they're very awesome just in general. I wish they were free.
What about Manhunters? What about Manhunters, Nigel? Do they still benefit from the Tree Walk ability?
They still got Tree Walker. Tree Walker is a little bit different. It gives you +2 defense against melee in trees still. It doesn't allow you to move through models anymore. It just does the +2. But it is pretty good. And then there's stealth, naturally, with tough. And then they're 14-14s, so they've got an okay stat line. But in comparison to the Kiki Monk, it's no contest. Kiki Monk wins. And then there's, you know, other factions that probably have similar, like, you know, I don't know.
Sure, like Legion has the Strider Deathstalker, who can be a royal pain to deal with.
Well, that, and the Legion actually has, like, kind of interesting tech, because they've got, obviously, the Hellmouth, they've got Incubi, they've got a bunch of just obnoxious garbage that sort of is just difficult to extricate. Incubi are nice, because if they do have a solo, and then they, from that solo, an Incubi pops out, it's just, you know, it's like a little mini Dracoon, just holding it down for you. And the other thing about the Incubi that's scary is, isn't there a situation where they could have, like, a unit contesting a flag, and then you kill a guy, and an Incubi pops out, and now they have a scoring threat. It's actually like you're like, oop! I traded a bad situation to a worse situation, or
sort of. You could also do the same thing with like punching a warjack and then, or punching a like a diretroll molar, and then the molar will spawn a whelp, and then the whelp's like on a flag. Like, yeah, you can do that too.
The tricky thing with incubi now is that they go exactly where the model was, and immediately.
So okay,
you have to kind of give it to him. You have to shoot the guy who's standing on the flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, whelps is kind of funny. I imagine the Mountain King already the best troll gargantuan, gains even more value for spawning solos.
Yeah, that's hilarious, actually. Because, yeah, he could, because he doesn't place them in base to base, right? It's like within three.
He places them base to base. The whelps you pay for are within two.
Okay, okay. Yeah, that gives him a huge amount of power to be base to base with a flag and just contesting it and being a huge threat. And then if you do any damage to it, which you'll have to if you want to play against their army.
Yeah. That's interesting. That seems like that could be a lot of fun, especially whenever you're just spawning dudes that could test. Like, hey, you hit me three times, so I'm going to spawn this dude, and then this next turn this dude's going to run over there and he's going to contest. So you'll score it this turn, but you know, you won't score it on my turn next turn. And then you're stuck in a decision-making mode where, like, well, do I clear this guy to score, or do I kill the Diretroll Mauler that's going to eat whatever, you know, whatever I send over there to kill it? I don't know. It seems like it'd be a lot of fun though. Like there's a lot of interesting dynamics there that are probably worth exploring, especially since with Power of Dunia in that particular theme force, most of the time you're looking at a pair of Northkin shamans and then your other selection of free solos is typically whelps. So it's interesting.
As a side note, it's my wife's birthday as we're recording right now, and she's unfortunately in Milwaukee, but I'm getting funny text messages from her because it's her birthday. She's drinking a glass of wine, but she's a horrible lightweight, so one glass is already working on her pretty good. Mm-hmm. And so I'm getting funny texts about how she's having trouble walking straight, and she's like, maybe another half glass. Two glasses of wine, you demon, you.
But yeah, I think that's a pretty good... Hopefully, that's a pretty good bit of an insight into, you know, obviously for new people for SR 2017 about some of the experiences that we've had, you know, and to some of the guidelines, some of the gotchas, so you just don't find yourself, as we've kind of highlighted, you know, just getting caught out and just losing because you're not cognizant of the threat of people scoring or getting outscored or not being able to contest.
Yeah, it feels like a fast... And I don't know if it feels like a very fast chess game. Like one, if you've ever played like speed chess and you're just like move, 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 the scenario kind of can feel that way. Like, the one thing I used to like about War Machine, and this isn't in any way a complaint about the current state of the game, but, I used to not really think or value thinking that far ahead. Like, I really just needed to adapt. I just needed to, play my turn knowing vaguely what they'll do in response to what I just did. And I don't really need to think that much farther ahead. Denny 2 was the first person who has like, okay, I actually have to play right now. I have to play right now what she's going to do in two turns from now because she'll just win the game if I don't like, if that Devastator is not where it needs to be, you know, on her this turn, I just lose the game period two turns from now. You know, so I have to like think, she's like the first person where that kind of was that way. But now it's just, you know, you move up. If your turn one is you just move up and kind of unpack your dudes, and then their turn is basically running to where they're like in your face and some sort of denial feat where their plus five armor or something is popped. You could just be done. Like the scenario is like, whoop! Like, yeah, it's a very fast game and you feel like you've like lost sort of your grasp very quickly if you haven't been thinking.
So there might still be some Vlad scenario play. Like I remember the first couple times that we dinked around with that all Marauders list, and it won't advanced move as much anymore. You'll only have like three or four jacks advanced moved, but that just feet and run Marauders at the opponent might give you the scenario win with Vlad.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be worth looking into again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I think that, is that a cast?
I think so. We're at 2 hours. We have about a half hour of like unusable pre-ramble basically. But yeah, it's pretty good, and it's also very long. Like we went really deep dive on the scenario, but we probably need a lot more anecdotal evidence, which is a lot more fun to sort of interject with.
I'm gonna play in a local steamroller this Saturday with my WITC list, so I'll have something to talk about next week for sure.
Fantastic, Scott. Wasn't something going on this Saturday down in your neck of the woods?
Yep, absolutely. So two things. First one is we're still doing the Team Red WTC fundraiser. So I'm running that at the Geekery in Kansas City. It's $10 to get in. All kinds of goofy little stuff you can do. Pay a dollar to reroll. You can add stuff that wouldn't normally be a part of your army for a fee. And it's all just there just to have, like, goofy fun rules. You can pay money to have Brandon Shirley play your game for you. Or if you really want to lose that bad, you can pay money to have me play your game for you. But there's it's just a whole bunch of goofy stuff like that. Definitely check it out. Dice on Table at 11. Registration is at 10. It is on Saturday, and I hope to see lots of people there. And then I also wanted to add, like, just as kind of a tie-in or a fallback to last week. So we talked about Tilt on the last podcast, and there was a lot of reaction. I got, like, a lot of messages from some different folks who were like, yeah, this is, like, I'm glad to hear you say that. Like, it's nice to know I'm not the only one who feels that way. So I played in a team tournament last Saturday, and it was Brent and Richie and I, and we ended up taking first. But the most important part was I was able to take some of the advice that Keith and you and John and all this great advice that a lot of listeners had given me, and I was able to take it and kind of employ it as I walked through. So my first round, I ended up playing against Carl Jones, who's an amazing player. And on top of that, he's playing like a really, really tough list pair of Dark Host and Ghost Fleet. So I choose to drop Karchev into it. Long story short, like, because I thought the magic weapons might be relevant, and I had a feeling he was going to drop Dark Host. So I end up playing against Dark Host. I end up losing the game, lost it pretty handily on scenario. But the difference was I didn't tilt in this one. I was looking at the board the entire time trying to figure out ways to win, or at least ways to not lose. So unfortunately, my nerves kind of got a hold of me a little bit, and I forgot some triggers that I should have hit, which would have given me a little bit better chance into the game. But just the piece of advice, like, from Keith, you know, don't focus on what's happened. Focus on what you can do now. One of the writers, one of the people on the forums messaged me and said, you know, think of it as a challenge to see, like, what the best play is for this turn. So I kind of started to use and employ those tactics, and it made it a lot easier to be able to play through the game, to be able to not live inside of my own head or just listen to those voices and just focus on the things I could do. And come to find out, had I not missed a couple of triggers, which are entirely my fault, had I not missed a couple of triggers, like, there was a chance that I could have been able to stay in that game. I don't know if that necessarily changes anything. Carl had a very commanding position in the game, but I was able to attrition. I was able to get a little bit of work done. And then had I thought about things logically and followed my path correctly, that game would have went on another turn. And then if it does that, who knows? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyways, it was just really huge. I wanted to just give, like, a quick follow up and to thank you for that advice, as well as to let the listeners know that, hey, it works.
You're going to have to put those skills to use this weekend, because I'm going to basically pay $10 each round to make you play my opponent's army, and then I'm going to slap the crap out of you for four rounds.
Oh, that's going to be amazing. Don't forget also for the fundraiser, if you want Taylor Moon Zones, they will be there.
Yep, absolutely.
I sign them.
Absolutely. And then Recruits is what, the 25th?
Yep.
All right. So this weekend, fundraiser, Recruits 25th. Also be on the lookout at the store for, we'll have a fundraising thing. We're going to be selling some, unique new dials. That'll be interesting to help fundraise for the, red team. But I think that basically is a wrap, guys. Thank you for, being on. You guys are awesome as usual.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And sorry if the questions were a little elementary, like going into SteamRoller 2017, but
no, it's perfect. Really, that's good. That's actually something that we used to do better. Like, when we first started podcasting, it was like we would get there. When I think it was originally Nick, who was relatively new at the time. And there's questions that never occur to us because we've been playing for too long. And that helps us explain things in a way that is more useful to people, which we wouldn't normally, which is normally very difficult to do, right? To consider that you're answering a question at a level that you don't normally, that has become automatic. So it's all that stuff that we don't think about anymore that's still very useful to people. It's hard to explain, but it's actually, the questions are extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to hear that.
And I think they make for a better podcast. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. This has been episode 322 of Muse on Minis. This is Keith.
Nigel.
Aaron.
Seabass.
Good night.
See you guys. Take it easy.
Yeah.
Bye, Aaron. It was good to have you.
Yes, my pleasure, guys. As I said, I'm...